CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, there's some fun casting news all over to report. So on Young and the Restless, we're going to see Michael Graziadei, who played the role of Phyllis's son, Daniel Romolotti, from 2004 to 2013, and again in 2016, back this fall for some new story. Now, Michael most recently appeared on The Lincoln Lawyer on Netflix, and he welcomed twin boys in August 2021, so he's certainly been busy, but it will be great to see him back in Genoa City. Now, over at Days of Our Lives, the show released a very spoilery preview video that showed Kyle Lauder back as Rex, Lamone Archie's Eli visiting Salem for the holidays, Victoria Grace, who we first saw as Wendy Shin in Beyond Salem 2, is coming to the mothership to connect with brother Lee and cross paths with Johnny. And Tanner Stein, who also made his debut as Joey Johnson in Beyond Salem 2, will come to Salem as Kayla's condition gets worse. We're also going to see Melody Thomas-Scott, Young and the Restless's Nikki, cross over to Bold and Beautiful to visit Deacon. And she'll also have some cute scenes with Jama Cook's Eric. And I say cute because Eric is designing a special something that Nikki picks up. And I think it's such a brilliant tie-in.
Well, our casting cup runneth over this week for sure. But in less fun casting news, GH fans watched Brando take his last breath this week, which means that Johnny Wachter, who joined the Port Charles ranks in 2020, is out. So I spoke to Johnny for an exit interview that appears in the new issue. And I have to say, on a personal level, how highly I think of this guy. You know, when he called me to do this interview, I really didn't know what to expect in terms of his mood, but he was in great spirits. He just has such a great attitude, no bitterness whatsoever. You know, I've spoken to a lot of actors whose first soap gigs ended sooner than they expected them to, and I'm sure you have as well, and know that that's not always the case in terms of the attitude, but he really gets that this is just how it goes sometimes, and I really appreciated how candid he was. He's such a lovely guy, and I can honestly see him having a huge primetime career. I certainly hope that he does.
Me too. I mean, he was so sweet when we talked to him on the podcast, and we know he's got the Gardasil commercials, so we'll be seeing him on our TV still. And in our new issue, we have an interview with Trevor St. John, who is set to make his YNR debut in a mystery role. Now, we haven't seen Trevor in daytime since One Life to Live, but he says he was both surprised and flattered to get the call to come in to meet for this role. He had a great first day. He says the set is really welcoming and everyone's so helpful, but admitted he's still adjusting to, you know, the crazy pace of soaps and the dialogue. But he tells a very sweet story about talking to Peter Bergman when he came in for a wardrobe fitting. Of course, Peter was called to the set, but he stopped to chat with Trevor despite, you know, the fact that he probably had to go to work. And that's really who Peter is, because he's like the unofficial ambassador of YNR. But Trevor said it was just such a great chat and it kind of made him, you know, excited to like report to work fully. But I'm excited to see how Trevor fits into the canvas. And because you and I both know who he is playing, I can say there's some really good story ahead.
Yes. And speaking of good story, there is something set to happen this week on GH that I know many fans have been long looking forward to. Anna and Valentin are going to consummate their relationship. I had a great conversation with James Patrick Stewart, who plays Valentin, about this hotly anticipated moment. That is also in the new issue. And we are also going to see YNR's Diane kiss Jack and Daze's Jennifer hit rock bottom with her pill popping.
Yeah, I mean, Katie McLean has been killing it as Jennifer, has spiraled in the wake of Abigail's death and just doing such excellent work. And as part of that story with Jennifer, we're going to see Marcy Miller return briefly as Abigail, because now that her murder has been solved, I'm not going to say who it was in case anyone isn't caught up yet on Peacock. Abigail will appear as a ghost next week to both Jennifer and Chad. And in very good timing, our guest today is Katie McLean, who we last podcasted with before she joined Daze. So let's check in with her to see how everything has been going in Salem. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Excited to be here.
Well, we are so excited to speak to you because the last time we did a podcast with you, you had not even started on Daze yet. And I feel there's so much new material to cover and some questions we didn't ask you the last time around.
Oh, well, it's been a roller coaster and I've been so blessed to be a part of the show. And I feel really grateful that they brought me on. So let's talk about it.
Okay, well, we're going to start. I can't believe we didn't ask you this the last time, but right at the beginning, you hail from Los Angeles and you got your start as an actress at a very young age. So tell us how you discovered your interest in performing and how you began doing it professionally.
Wow. Well, that was a long time ago. I started when I was 9 years old. I was a tap dancer and I was dancing in the Guinness Book of World Records. And I saw myself on television with a ton of other tap dancers. And, you know, the cameras were going by and I was very young. We were in a big football stadium, I think somewhere in Irvine. And I thought, wow, I'm on TV. That's the greatest thing ever. And what else can I do to be on television? And a girl I knew in class did commercials. And I was like, Mom, I want to do commercials. And so she got me an agent and I started doing commercials. The desire to act came a bit later. I was just at first really interested in being with the Kool-Aid guy, you know, eating burgers and getting paid. Like, I'm on TV eating a burger. Awesome.
Well, if you were shooting for Kool-Aid and burger, I wonder if it came as a little bit of a letdown that I think your first commercial was for a much more dry product, which is Band-Aids.
Yes, yes. It was Band-Aids, but I got to wash a horse, and which I don't know if that's a thing actually, but I had a soap and a bucket and a soapy water and a big brush. And I was scrubbing the horse with the soapy water and they were like, more soap. We can't tell she's washing the horse. And I was like, do people do this? Is this a thing? But I got to be with the horse and that was great. So I was very happy.
Did you get to sing the jingle? Did they have the jingle?
Yes.
Then? Okay. Very nice.
I'm stuck on Band-Aids jingle. Yeah.
Band-Aids stuck on me.
That's right. My finger at my arm. I don't know how I hurt myself washing this horse. Because I'm a child and that's what we do.
Well, your first big TV credit was a 5-episode run on St. Elsewhere. So who did you work with and what stands out to you about that gig?
Christina Pickles played my mom. And the first episode was that she had cancer and I had to touch her boob. And that was a very weird thing for a child to be like, oh, here, touch my this strange woman's boob. And I was like, okay. That was a weird job. Welcome to showbiz. Professional. This is all very professional. And, you know, the one to be on a serious note about that, you know, my mother did end up dying of breast cancer. And now I make PSAs for the National Breast Cancer Coalition, which is an amazing group that continues to fight to raise money to end breast cancer, put a breast cancer vaccine, you know, into play, and is really, you know, going great guns to make a difference. So that storyline won't be anymore on television.
That's here.
Yeah. It's funny how it's been. It's not so funny, but it's been a part of my life since I was very young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Goodness. Well, right before you booked All My Children Are, I think the previous year, you were on an episode of Cheers, playing the role of Coach's niece, Joyce. So tell us about that experience.
Oh, it was a thrill. I mean, it shot at Paramount Studios. So I got to be on the lot and I saw Spock, aka Leonard Nimoy, in the commissary. And, wow, you know, it was just glamour, glamour, major power, you know, actors. Ted Danson was wonderful, lovely, couldn't have been nicer, funny, funny as you imagine that he is. Woody Harrelson is a lovely, lovely man. And everyone was just very kind to me. And so I was totally terrified. I was 16 years old and I was taking a lot of acting classes at the time. And so I would do lots of preparation behind the scenes, which they weren't used to. So I was doing a lot of ha, ha, you know, like shaking myself out, you know, doing all these vocal exercises. You can imagine 16 year old. And they were like looking at me like, okay, like she's about to go on and do Shakespeare, you know, and this is a sitcom, girl. So you can just take a breath. But it's what I wanted to be my best. I wanted to do my best. And so, you know, I went all the way. But, yeah.
Well done. Well, you came into the soap universe in a big way when you assumed the role of All My Children's Dixie in 1988. The last time you were on the podcast, we asked you about working with David Canary, who's Adam Dixie married. But this time around, tell us about working with Julia Barr, who played Brooke, whose marriage to Adam unraveled when Dixie got pregnant.
I'm so glad that you're talking about Julia Barr, because I feel like Julia never really got enough of her light. You know, her spotlight really was not as bright, just simply because she was around so many very, very bright people. And she's just an incredible talent. Again, funny, witty, way drier humor than you think that she's going to have. And it was, you know, she was a total professional, but the character that she played was a businesswoman. And there weren't that many businesswomen in that era, like 89, 90, 91, like on television being like, that's her job. You know, woman with heading a corporation, like her husband heads a corporation. It was always like, oh, we're married now. You do the job and I'll stay at home. And that's my dream. So I really loved that Julia took that character and made her very complex and real, as you know. I think she was very much ahead of her time. And she was just always incredibly kind to me, which I also appreciated over many, many, many years, always wanting good things for me. And she even came to see my play that I directed in 2018. So we have a long, long friendship. And I just love Julia. And I think any show would be lucky to have her if they thought to bring her back. I put in a plug for Julia Barr.
You're here.
I would find that. Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
So when Dixie married into the Martin family, which, as we know, she did many a time, Joe and Ruth became her parents-in-law. Tell us what comes to mind when you think about their portrayers, the late Ray McDonald and the late Mary Fickett, starting with Ray.
Well, again, Ray was incredibly dry humor, and no one could make Michael Knight laugh more than Ray McDonald. I'm sure you have talked to him about this, but it was incredible to see Michael peel over, falling off the sofa in laughter with things that Ray would do. And, you know, I was sort of young and I was like, I'm not quite sure I'm catching all of what's going on, but really, clearly there's something happening here because Michael is losing it. And I, you know, Ray was, I think he'd been on soaps for so long playing that patriarchal character. The dryness that he would bring to that was just wonderful. It's funny when I think about soaps, like do we have the patriarchs like we used to, like so much? Not
so much.
Yeah. Yeah. They were like the center of the show with the, like the moral center, you know, mom and dad, Joe and Ruth. And Mary Fickett was, she was tough on me sometimes, you know, she was a professional and wanted me to show up totally 100% as a professional on time, know your lines, be ready to go, take a position. And I appreciated that because when there was a time where I began to get a little tired, she helped me snap back and remember that these fundamentals, if you keep them in play, you know, they will also carry you, you know, make life actually easier for you than if you don't do them. So I feel so grateful to have been able to work with those people. You know, they had illustrious careers even before they started on the soap. So You know, it was I feel like I've bridged that gap between an era of, you know, the 50s where, you know, and the and 60s and 70s. And now I feel very fortunate to have been a part of all that.
Well, Dixie's brother on the show, the dastardly Will, was played by James Patrick Stewart, who is now GH's Valentine. So he speaks in the most glowing terms of you, and you should feel no pressure to return the favor when we ask. But what stands out to you about working with him?
Oh, my gosh. Well, when Patrick first came on the show, I mean, he was a firecracker. He was full of wildness, which I totally enjoyed and was also completely annoyed by. Because I've been given so much discipline, like here, stay in the lanes. And he was always trying to bend the rules and break the rules. He stepped it up and he was like, now I have a point to prove. I'm going to prove that I am an excellent actor and stop screwing around. And that was magnificent to see him take that, make that turn, you know, and to be witness to that. It was, his talent was always obvious. He had a very unique talent and a unique take on things. So I think he was able to funnel that and focus that by his own choice to, you know, do a character so well, he got an Emmy nomination. So I thought that was a wonderful arc to be able to see. And then just in life, you know, he's been my friend, you know, for 30 some odd years. I've known him forever. And to also see him through his ups and downs and then taking on this character on General Hospital, it's been wonderful to watch him completely own it and step up to the mark on every level. And I'm just so happy for him. He's a funny, fun, dedicated, disciplined man who really brings his integrity to the fore with his work. And I think if there's any kind of compliment I could give him, that it would be, my highest compliment would be on his personal integrity and in his work and in his life. I have great admiration for that.
I love that. Did you ever have to share a dressing room in All My Children? And if so, who were your roommates?
I did right in the beginning for a period of time with Rosa Nevin, who was first Rosa Langschwat. I was like, that's your actor name? And she Cecily to Maurice Bernard's Nico when he was on All My Children before General Hospital. Rosa is another lifelong friend who I am just so grateful to know. Extraordinarily funny and just a beautiful human being. I mean, sharing dressing rooms, you know, I think she helped me ground myself. I was terrified when I started All My Children, as I think most young actors are when they start a show, that just absolutely no idea what to do other than show up, learn your lines, stand there and try not to faint in front of the bright lights, you know, and just deliver them. Like, am I here? Are you here? Or is this happening? This is my dream come true. What do I do? Just overwhelmed. And her humor and her kindness and her being so funny and like, oh, come on, babe. Oh, come on, hon, relax, you know, take it easy, girl. This is not rocket science, you know. She was, she just helped me so much. So I love her so much. She's great.
Well, now you have been on 4 different shows. So can you rank your dressing rooms for us from best to worst?
That's a really good question. I would say always All My Children had the best dressing rooms, especially when they moved from 66th and Columbus to 67th and Columbus, I think, and to 66th and West End, into the big corporate building. They were very big and they had like a lounger and a sink and a closet. And that was a really nice room. So that's best. it's the truth. Let's see. I think second would be As the World Turns. We had to go way out to Brooklyn, but the rooms were reasonably nice. They were smaller and clean. Third would be Days of Our Lives. I'm usually moved around to different people's dressing rooms. They're older. It's a very old building and a little upgrade would do wonders, but it's, but it's still okay. You know, it's people keep their rooms very nice and clean and they've cleaned them, keep them nice during COVID. Last, if you wouldn't believe it, is Young and the Restless.
Why?
That place looks like it's had, you know, several tornadoes go through. every single room. There's even the nice rooms I've been in. I've been like, geez, Louise, this is, you know, has seen some days, you know, people, have, what are they doing in here? It's like, you know, like it's rough. I mean, for such a glamorous show, I feel like those rooms were my least favorite.
Well, they're turning 50 next March. Maybe they'll get a little, you know, refurbish for the golden anniversary.
They deserve it. They really do. Working hard for 50 years, you know, how about a new mirror? New lighting. Hey, new carpet. Whoa, it could happen.
Well, I feel like one of the through lines that's come up for almost every name we've discussed from All My Children is humor and the good humor they had backstage. When you think about the actors you worked with at All My Children, who do you think was the funniest actor behind the scenes?
Well, oh, okay. Now there's a few because these were some very funny people. John Callahan, hilarious. Michael Nader, hysterical. Michael Knight, of course, very funny. Female wise, who were funny people? Gosh, Julia Barr, dry. The dryness of her humor was just wonderful. Ruth Warwick, wildly funny. Louis Edmonds, oh, God bless him. He was so funny.
He grew some killer pot, I hear. I forget what actor told me that.
I knew that, really? Oh my gosh. I didn't know that. Makes a lot of sense all of a sudden. I was not witness to such a thing. I guess I stayed in the other side of the studio.
Well, same question for the As the World Turns cast where you played Rosanna. Who was the comedian there?
Oh my gosh. Michael Park could be very funny. He was kind of a jokester and probably Trent Dawson could be very funny. And of course, Maura West is really, her humor is delicious and sly and slips in around the curves and edges. And I just ate it up. I just loved her. Wry. She was wry and dry. Love that girl.
Absolutely. What about YNR?
YNR I did not find to be such a very funny set. I found it to be pretty, gosh, you know, it's hard to talk about YNR, that experience. It was, what can I say? I'll tell you this story. How about this? I brought my friend Jackie to the set of YNR and all she wanted to see was Victor's office. I think that Victor's office has resonated for women and business women and men throughout time in such a way that it was like the pinnacle of like power, the power center where things happen, the person who makes it go or not go. And she had got to sit in Victor's chair and, you know, just what that meant to her. It was so wonderful. I was like, oh, my God, Jackie, I had no idea you were such a YNR fan. And she's a huge business person herself, like massive. And this soap must have had this massive influence on her about what could be and what her life could be. So I love that about YNR. I love that it's influenced the glamour of that show and that the glamour influence on people who aspire to be something, you know, greater than where they came from. And when soaps act like that, I just think they do a wonderful service.
Dixie was infamously proposed to by Tad while he was wearing a chicken suit. And when the show was going off the air, Dixie donned a chicken suit herself. So I have a two-part question for you. What do you remember about Michael Knight in that chicken suit? And what do you remember about yourself in the chicken suit?
So when we shot the chicken suit stuff in 1989, we had James Mitchell in the scene who really, he was the comedy. Michael was the setup, but his expressions brought the comedy. And, you know, my job was to play like, oh, this is so funny. And oh, my dear heart, my darling and my sweetheart. But James Mitchell would stand there and of course they had to do like reactions and he would never be amused, you know. And when we'd have to do the take at the end, he would say, and we were looking at each other like, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? He'd say, birds on a beach, birds on a beach, birds on a beach. which is so horrible. And I was like, I never forgot that at the end of the scene, if we're all looking at each other, it's like seagulls looking left, right. I love it. But I love doing the chicken suit scenes. And I thought Michael was very game, and it was sweet. It was out of the box. And, you know, it was all based that we had sat on a bench and eaten chicken fingers. And that's how our romance started. And, you know, I love that, things like that. I was talking to a friend the other day, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if, you know, who knows, Jennifer loses it and joins the circus. And she was like, oh my God, that would be so much fun. Like, I love when they used to do very big and crazy turns, and they still do big and crazy turns, you know, come on, what am I talking about? But the big and crazy turns that had to do with costumes. So I'm a big fan of costumes. Those are fun. Yeah.
So you did not have any like negative experience of being inside a chicken suit?
Oh, when I got inside the chicken suit, no, I was ready to go. I'm an actor, for crying out loud, right? You know what I mean? Put me in a shark suit, put me in a bunny suit. I'm very happy. This is the world in which I can inhabit with great joy. So, you know, no problem at all. Yeah.
That's awesome.
What a pro.
What a pro.
it's part of the makeup of pretend, right? You know, like I once took a job trying to be a normal person at a coffee shop, just thinking like, this was after, I think, up to 2005. I'd had a lot of work on soaps, but I was like, I need to be a normal person. Let me go work at a coffee shop for a while and just be normal. Well, of course, I had to wear bunny ears, you know, like I had to, like, you know, I couldn't do it. I was impossible. It's not in my makeup. What can I say?
That is so great. Well, sorry to bring it down, but in March, the daytime community lost one of its true pillars, Catherine Hayes, who played Kim on As the World Turns. So what do you remember about working with her, or just her presence on the set in general?
I didn't really know Catherine that well. I knew that she was a very spiritual person, and that she was a very ethical person. And I admired that about her. And I was very sorry to hear that she had a very bad illness and that took her. And but she had a grace and a very long history of that show. And I think that that she will be remembered. And it's beautiful that you asked about her. And it's important, I think, for some of these great soap actors of the past to continue to be remembered. They really brought a lot, and it is so much work. It's so much dedication, the day after day, you know, 5 days a week, you know, years and years in a row. It's wonderful what you guys do to honor these veterans and their memory. And I truly hope that the companies that own these shows, you know, see the value in it and bring them back to these, you know, they have so much material. It would be so incredible to watch a season from 1950 or 1960. Oh my God, the work that was done. Really great. So,
you know, there's talk about Peacock getting the entire Days catalog.
No.
And the only thing missing is season two, because it was lost in a fire. But I would love to start at the beginning in 1965. I think it would be a gift.
Right? Wow. Oh, my God. Totally. I mean, I always say I watched an episode of Dark Shadows when I was younger to try to, and it hit me like, in this studio that I'm working, these flats and these characters were doing that kind of work. And, you know, it's like live TV. It was live TV back then. Or I think there was Studio 50, I think it used to be called. And they would do live television, like a theater piece, you know? And I've always thought that's what soaps kind of grew out of, with their own romantic bent. And it has... it's exciting. It's exciting to see what people were able to do live into people's homes, like in the moment. I still think that's one of the most thrilling achievements in television history.
Oh, absolutely. So let's move on and into some days of our lives. It was in September of 2020 that you began airing on Days as Jennifer, but tell us how you were approached about the role.
Well, I think it came through an email to my manager, and then my manager gave me a call and said, hey, forwarded the email to me and said, are you interested in this? And I was like, am I interested in this? Like, what? Are you kidding me? What? What is out of the blue? I mean, it was during the pandemic. And I was like, why? Well, she's not coming in and she doesn't. What's the story? I mean, because this is an iconic character, an actress that has played the part for over 20 years. And I thought, well, okay, it's COVID. I get it. Flying and kids and everything at home, new babies at home. I get it. That's a choice that I understand, you know, wanting to protect the health of everyone in your family, by not traveling. So I was like, yeah, I'll do it. I'm like 15 minutes away from the studio. 100%. This is easy for me. It's everything is being done in a safe fashion. So, you know, it was a no brainer. So I was excited. I was very excited, very happy to be asked.
Well, you really hit the ground running with that storyline. I mean, you kind of came in a very intense period in Jack and Jennifer's relationship. So what was that like for you? You didn't really get eased into things, I feel.
You know, it really wasn't a problem. Like, I did my homework. I watched a lot of shows with Jack and Jennifer and Matt and Missy. And, you know, I was like, wow, this is when you're working on a different show, because I was doing all my children at the same time. You don't always get to see everybody else's best of. So it was a joy to be like, oh, my God, that's what they were doing. Oh, that was doing this and they were doing that. And that's God. And, you know, and Missy and I were so much at the same similar place, you know, in our lives, similar age, doing similar types of roles, you know, damsel in distress type of stuff. And there's the Matt and Missy were sort of like the West Coast Tad and Dixie in a way.
100%.
Yeah. Right? So I was like, oh, okay, right. I get it. He's kind of the wild child and she's sort of the grounding force, but she's troubled. Okay, I get this scenario. So then it just was a matter of like picking out the differences. Like, okay, how are these two unique in this way? And what is their relationship and what's her, what can I bring to it in terms of Katie, you know, and to I don't know, lean into the family dynamic even more, that was just my choice. Like what choices do I have within this paradigm? And then of course they gave me that delicious storyline of, you know, he's cheating. He's cheated with the woman that slept with your father.
Happens all the time.
I'm like, when you stay with him, like, I think that was the hardest thing. Like, you stay with him. You're so angry and yet the marriage makes you stay with him. Okay. that was really juicy. And I also, you know, I hadn't had, let's see, the last time I'd worked on a daytime show was in 2015 on YNR. So it had been like a span of a few years. I've been focusing on filmmaking and, you know, just not really driving forth the acting quite as much. And so I was like, okay, I get to this opportunity to show what I can do, you know? So I, you know, geared up all of my energy to knock it out of the park. And, you know, I think I did pretty good.
Oh yeah, I think you did.
I would say so. I have a question. What do you remember about the day of work where a certain Mr. John Lindstrom came in to kiss you because the actors weren't allowed to kiss because of COVID, but obviously you and John had special circumstances going on and could actually smooch.
I think I was more excited about that day than John was. And you know, John was like, really? I'm like, come on, babe, come on, come on. You know, he put up with it. He was a good sport, but it was funny to have stunt lips played by John Lindstrom.
Can add that to his
special skills.
Exactly. Stunt lips. I've got experience.
Lips for hire.
That's right. Well, they were.
You know, it's so interesting to me that you've actually never originated a role on a soap, just for how much of a mark you've made in this industry. You know, how much of it do you feel like you needed to take the previous portrayer's version of a character into account when you're wrapping your mind around what you're going to do? Or does it depend on the show and the circumstance? Because as you mentioned, Missy did Days and Cynthia Watros was YNR's Kelly before you.
Well, it's funny that I can understand how people can see that in all kinds of ways. But for me, I don't really think about it, you know, like they're not in the part anymore. I'll get an idea of what they did. And it just seems like, you know, the character is so much bigger than the actor, especially on soaps, you know, and I cannot in any way mimic or try to pretend to be the other actor playing that part. That would be like too many layers of pretending. You know, other actresses have certain strengths and certain character attributes that are marvelous. And there's just no way I could try to do what they do. So I've tried to find where I can bring me to the role and just focus on that. And it's an opportunity. Listen, you know, we're in an industry where the opportunity is slim. And when the opportunity knocks, you know, you say yes, because it's a door, and through that door, then you can create. And so it's an odd happenstance. You know, I never really thought about it too much until someone else said, "Hey, you know, you realize every character you played was played by somebody else first." And I was like, oh, I guess so. Maybe somebody will write a character for me that's original. I hope so. Let's put it out there in the universe.
Like, yeah.
Had you ever met Matthew Ashford over the years before you worked as his wife?
You know, we're always around, you know, the many years you'd see each other, you'd see people like, oh, there's that guy, or oh, there's that girl across a crowded room. And I remember thinking like, wow, that guy is talented. Whoa, he has a power talent. So I was thrilled. I was like, well, I always wanted to work with him. So it was like, oh my God, I get to work with Matt Ashford. It's so great.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the experience of working with him.
Well, he is the sweetest person. I mean, he's just a dear, and he works very hard, and he's very committed, and he worries, you know, you can tell like, oh, was I there? And I'm like, oh, no, you were there. You were so there. It was so great. So he wants to do a good job always. And, you know, I admire that. So I'll take that over like, you know, is it lunch? You know, like, is it time for, are we done? You know, like I'd much rather have the concern over having done the work to its nth degree. And Matthew has that, you know, deep concern and care. And I like that. I'll take it.
Well, tell us about working with Marcy Miller, who played Jennifer's daughter, Abigail, and speaks so highly of working with you.
Oh, Marcy. Marcy's going to be a big movie star. We'll see her in a big television series. I just know it. She's wildly talented. And it's so funny because I remember we had a talk on the sort of the last day that we worked together. One of the last days we worked together before a big break. And she's like, I can see why people stay on these shows like forever and ever and ever. Like there's like a family feeling. And there's like I get to come to work. I do my job and it's fun. And I know everybody. It was hard. She told me it was really, really hard to leave and take that risk, you know? I don't really know what the circumstances were, but I think she's just terrific and has such a complete, unique and grounded talent. Like she has a realness to her that I think other people than myself are going to pick up on and want to, you know, put her in her stuff. She reminds me a little bit of Kelly Giddish. Do you remember who played Di on?
Yeah.
On All My Children, and then ended up on Law and Order for like 15 years, and that by the country of Botswana, you know, like I'm sure, like holy moly, I did not see that coming. but she has that kind of realness to her that I think will really serve a show that the right show that is waiting for her to find it.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you think back about the first stretch of time you played Jennifer, you know, did it take some time for you to feel comfortable on the set and in Jennifer's skin, or did you kind of take to it right away?
You know, once you put on the heels, you know, and you walk onto a set, at least for me, it's like old home, you know, like, okay, this is, the West Coast version of something that I know very well from the East Coast. And oh, here's the family living room, right? And the fresh flowers. And I think once you kind of have to take a point of view. And once you land in that point of view and I think it was the right point of view of like how Jennifer is towards her family, which is, you know, it was a historic point of view. It was just, it felt very comfortable. I felt like I fit right in. And at the same time, I tried to be very careful about the awareness that it can make other actors uncomfortable when you wear the shoes of a character, because it says that to their mind that they go, oh, I could be replaced. You know, it reminds them like no one is irreplaceable. And that is a very unsettling feeling for people who've been on a show for a very long time. Like I don't like it. When I was playing Dixie, I was like, hey, nobody's going to replace me. Not happening. So I tried to be very considerate, you know, of that while also taking my space and doing the job that I was hired to do. So I just think that, what would the fans want to hear about that? I think the most important thing for them to know is that I try to treat that character and the actress Missy who played that character with a great deal of respect. And even though I, as an actor, try to take my space and, you know, hold that character in myself and play her to the greatest degree, I also really respect the history also of the relationships with the actress, with the other actors, the character with the other characters. Like, I know I'm walking in to a potential minefield of people not liking me or, you know, resenting that I'm there or being confused as to why I'm there. So I just try to treat people with a lot of kindness and a lot of consideration for all of that while still doing the job that I was hired to do. And I think that's important. And I think it may not be headline worthy in terms of like, you know, the TMZ side of things, but but it's certainly, I think the one thing I love about daytime is that for the most part, we really try to be kind to one another. Mm-hmm. It's the nicest press. It's the nicest community in that way, that we know that it's hard and that we're serving the story. We're all serving the story. And that's the greater thing that we're all, you know, pleasured by is the wild and wacky turns of that come out of the heads of these head writers.
Right.
Well, Katie, you made daytime Emmy history in 2021 when you took home the Emmy for Outstanding Guest Performer for your work on Days, becoming the first actress to win a daytime Emmy for three different roles. You also ticked the boxes of winning on three different networks and in three different decades. Can you reflect on that a little bit? Because it is a pretty remarkable claim to fame.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It was very exciting to see that. And it popped up on Deadline. I people were starting to ask me, hey, wait a minute, is this history making? Now, I know there's other actresses that have won three Emmys for, you know, in daytime history, but not in this particular way. And, you know, ironically, all three of them being characters that I did not create, you know, originate, but characters that I brought to life. And, you know, there's a great satisfaction to that win. There's a great satisfaction because it also, it highlights what women can do. And I still think that we are in a time where women's exceptionality, women's excellence, and women's ability to do things that are extraordinary continues to need to be, you know, showcased. It's important. It balances our society to have that. And it's not right that women have been secondary and pushed down and questioned and judged, or that we're harder on women than we are on men in terms of their achievements, you know, as if that, oh, they didn't really, you know, we find ways to like cut it, you know, which just isn't right. Like, it was a really big deal. It was a really big deal. And, you know, as you guys know, like, I work my butt off. And I am driven to be exceptional. I am driven to bring my best because I know when the light shines bright, it helps other people be bright. It gives them permission to be bright. And I am happy when everyone is doing well. It's not just about me. I know that, like, deeply. But it also shows that, like, I've had a lot of things happen to me, as you guys probably know about, you know, a lot of life, a lot of people giving me a hard time. And to shine despite that gives me the greatest joy. That is my greatest accomplishment, I think, to have been able to win those awards, to do the work that got those awards, and despite all the things that happened to me, because it also shows that there is a way that it's worth fighting for yourself, you know, which I did. And I'm very proud of myself in that regard. Mm-hmm. Of course, I come from a middle America, you know, mindset. So I still have the voice in my head that says, oh, my God, you're bragging. Shut up.
No, you should brag. Well, we could brag for you because you deserved every one of them. It's an impressive distinction to have next to your name.
That, absolutely.
You know, I don't know that we'll see again anytime soon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
However, you could get another Emmy for the work you've been doing on Days of Our Lives recently in the wake of Abigail's death. So first of all, she was brutally murdered. You were excellent playing the scenes after that terrible loss. But tell us what stands out to you about Jennifer having to say goodbye to Abigail and filming that.
Oh, that was so hard. That was so hard. A lot of people don't know this, but it's odd to talk about in the press, but it's, you know, my best friend died this year of ovarian cancer. And
so sorry.
So I thank you. And she had it for 2 years, you know, so I was shooting it, you know, all of that. And it's not like I'm not a method actor. Like, I don't replace one scenario for another. Like, I am not crying over my dead friend when I did that scene. It's just that I have a lot of understanding about loss. And I also think that that scene was so, it just touched me. That beautiful girl being so brutally murdered, the whole concept of that was just, it just knocked me out, you know? So the first time I tried to do the take, I couldn't remember a single line. It just went out of my head, which rarely happens. I'm usually pretty good on that. And then Albert Allar had to come up and say, hey, it's okay. You got this, you know, trust the material and just go for it. And so that's what I did. I was just like, okay, I kind of was in a zone, you know, and then you just try to hang on to one thing and ride it like a wave. That's the best way I can describe it. It's like being a surfer on a board. You can't think, you just have to go. And that's what happened. And God bless Marcy. She was able to hold still.
She said you made it difficult. She said you touched her so much that she really had trouble not crying.
I think she did. She did at one point. And I was like, oh, it's great. It's the downstage eye. They're not going to see that. Oh.
Yeah. That sounds like a great memoir title. You know, as the fallout from Abigail's death has progressed, we've learned that Jennifer has been turning to pills as a coping mechanism. You know, were you excited to take on that story and tell us about your approach to playing it?
I was so thrilled to get this storyline and so appreciative because, you know, they didn't have to write it. You know, they could have just focused on Chad and the family and, you know, let us become the comforting parents. And the fact that they did was such a grace to me, because I really thought, like, how is this woman going to survive the death of her daughter? Like, and how are we going to justify her ability to just go on? And so they really did a great job writing that. And I was so, so happy. You know, I've known a lot of people who've struggled with addiction in my life. And so I also, it just works for me to make these storylines about something other than myself playing them. So I just try to, like, think about other people and what the reality of their experience was like and try to bring it to life. And I also know that, like, opiate addiction is, like, a really big deal in America right now. And it's like, there are people that are dying from it. And so I was also, you know, that always really works for me. It's a key that turns to doing things for others and helping the world in some way. you know, or at least acknowledging the reality of other people suffering. And so I was just so super, super grateful. And also, you know, listen, it's another chance to show people what I can do. And there's a thing that used to be in Hollywood, right? Like, you know, over 40 ladies, you know, this you start serving tea, you know, you show up for a like, how you doing, honey, kind of mom moments. And listen, I was like, okay, you know, fine. But, you know, I'm 52 and to have a great storyline like this, where it like values the experience of a woman my age and her, that she may still be struggling. She may not have reached the nirvana of perfection. Oh my God. As we were all supposed to by 50. Like, we've figured it all out. Oh my God. Wait a minute. We haven't. Oh my God. So what's happening? And I also think like so many of the fans are my age, you know, I mean, or just a little bit older, or we're in the same age range. And so it, you know, like, great. Like, give them a story with a woman that, you know, I mean, of course there's other women on the show that are my age and that they're giving them story as well, but to be one, another one to, is great. It's very validating across the board for me and I think for others. And so I was just super, super happy to have it, you know, this arc. It's just, and it's a good one. It's a good story. It's really well written. And, I gave it 1000%, to honor it and to show again the community, like, listen, I loved you for a very long time and grateful for the work that I have been given for a very long time. And I want to continue to honor that, that you guys have been so kind to me and accepting me and having me, you know, in the community. So this is my way of giving back and saying, you know, thank you, thank you, thank you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, something that we're going to see without giving too much away is Rourke Critchlow back in this story, who plays Jennifer's brother, Mike. So without necessarily saying why he comes back, what was it like to work with him?
A lovely man. And I hope they bring him back even more, because he was just terrific. You know, one of those great grounded in history kind of characters. What a joy. What a pleasure. I just enjoyed him so much.
Mm-hmm. Because we've really seen her interact with a lot of Jennifer's family through the story, including Suzanne Rogers and Susan Seaforth Hayes. And it's just made it really kind of grounding and relevant, I would think, to the audience to see the people in Jennifer's life going through this journey with her.
100%. Those characters have, they bring it to the reality of it to another level, because addiction affects the family. You know, they say it's a family disease. And so everyone is affected by it. It throws things out of kilter of how things, you know, should be. And so I think they did a great job with making sure that it had, like, it was a pebble in the water that had resonance further outward.
I'm curious about your reaction to Days making the leap it recently made to Peacock. Especially since you were part of the noble, if ultimately unsuccessful, effort to bring All My Children to streaming in 2013.
I'm thrilled that it's going. It's a huge change. It's a culture shift. You know, the move from cable to an app is just massive. It can't be underestimated, especially for daytime, where we used to, it held up the network, so to speak. But I think, you know, times change. And I know I watch most of my television on apps now. I mean, HBO, you know, Paramount, like, even CBS even is an app. And I think a lot of people have made that transition. So it's not that hard, really. You know, we've already been doing it for a while. I think it's just the familiarity of having it on, you know, that particular way, waiting for the commercial to end, you know, although that may still be the case in some places, but it's just a little bit of a shift, but not that big a deal, not that big a shift. You know, people are making it, and I'm excited to be a part of that, that shift. I do like, evolutions in technology. And this is evolution, a growth. It's not a going backward. And I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to say to the fans listening, your diehard fans for All My Children and As the World Turns, and your new fans from Days of Our Lives?
I am just so grateful to the fans who've supported me for all of these years, and especially the ones that seem to find all this old stuff that I've done and posted on Twitter, scenes that I forgot about, moments that I'm grateful that I had, and that I get to get other people get to relive it that way through their posting, that digging into YouTube and finding this piece and that piece. And also just super grateful to for the support from the Days community, because they did not have to embrace me. And I feel that more accepted and appreciated. And I've tried to prove myself to them. And I really, really appreciate their acceptance of me, and Missy's very kind acceptance and support. She's just been great. So yeah, I mean, just what else can I say? You know, they're the reason we do all of this. You know, we do this for them, for their to touch them, and I'm grateful that they're hanging on and continuing to watch the soaps and support the soaps. They're important, and so I want to say thank you.
Well, we thank you, Katie. This was so much fun, and we will have to do it again. Third time's a charm. Okay.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Katie McLean for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.